Most organizations, companies, churches, even grocery stores have like a mission statement, core values, or a vision statement. Some of them have it up on their walls, right? You walk into the store and they tell you what their commitments are. And, you know, we hold them accountable to live in line with the values they claim to have. I mean, you would be slightly disappointed if the Center for Spiritual Living all of a sudden was discriminatory towards someone. Many places are, but you don't expect them to be, so that's fine for them to do. You know, that we have the right to refuse service to anyone. But if the Center for Spiritual Living did that, something would be incongruent. So organizations have this, churches have this, but for some reason, we as individuals have not taken the time to write down our core values, to be really clear about what our vision statement, what our mission statement is. And Gandhi said that happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are all in alignment. They're all in harmony. We can't possibly live in line and in harmony in a congruent life if we're not clear about what our values are. Does that make sense? Like if you're not clear about what your values are, how can you live in line with them? You haven't been clear. In fact, many of us have swapped back and forth from day to day. And so if we're not consistent with our intentions, with our values, then we can change on a whim. We can, you know, even say, my intention is to be kind, but then something happens and we are unkind. And then, as we talked last night, then we go as far as blame someone else for our unkindness. Well, you did that to me. Nothing ever happens to us. It all happens for us to learn from, grow from, and most importantly, move on from. So the intention, you know, if what you think, what you say, and what you do need to all be in alignment, we have to be very clear about what our values are. And I go as far as say, write them down. Write down what your values are. If you are in a relationship or married or have a best friend, share those values with them and say, listen, I've been living my life this way for 30, 40, 50 years, and now I want to make some changes. I want to be kinder. I want to be more patient. I want to be more generous. But I have this pattern of behavior. I've been behaving this way all along, and I want to create a new one. So next time you see me inclined or about to make a decision that's not in line with my new values, please gently nudge me back to the path I want to be on. In fact, I go as far as say that's why we get together every Sunday or more regularly. It's to remind one another, to bring each other back onto the path. Because it's hard. I'm not going to suggest that living this life that's all congruent and all incredible is easy. Or, as people say, it's easier said than done. The alternative, however, is to live your entire life constantly being affected by everything and everyone around you. You see something on the news and all of a sudden your blood pressure goes up. Somebody cuts you off and you get very, very upset. It's how we're perhaps programmed to react. But the invitation, especially through mindfulness practice, mindfulness is that pause between impulse and action so that we respond instead of react. And there's a big difference there. Because then when we witness something that we deem as unjust or unfair or, you know, violent or whatever is not in line with your values, instead of hating the person who's doing that and being angry and then protesting against it, which quite often you then become part of the problem because you're the one out there screaming and yelling and white-fisted and white-knuckled and just really angry. And you know, when you hate the hater, you become a hater, so you become part of the problem. The invitation is to promote what we love instead of bashing what we hate, right? So when you witness something that is not in line with your values, That's great. That white knuckle, that immediate, like, oh, this doesn't feel right, that's a good indicator. To me, I go, that this is great. This is an invitation for me to go, what decision can I make that would promote the solution instead of me being part of the pollution? Because quite often, we don't realize it, but we're just perpetuating the cycle of violence and anger. If you study NVC, nonviolent communication, the word should is one of the most hostile words in our language. And we are constantly shooting all over other people, we're shooting all over ourselves, and it's because we have this idea, this mold, this blueprint of how we think life should be, how I think people should behave, how other drivers should drive, right? What is the, anyone who drives faster than me is a maniac, and everyone who drives slower than me is a moron, right? And so it's really humbling to remember that there's this image that we have of like the world according to me. And I hope that when we remind ourselves of that, that this is just the ego talking, that we can just kind of turn it down a notch and go, I can't simultaneously believe in a higher power and spirit and in God and then at the same time worry that things are going not the way I think they should. We have such a limited perspective of the world. You know, when you look at a picture, let's say a picture of spaghetti, the picture only captures two dimensions. Now, we see with three dimensions, so we know that that spaghetti has texture, it has depth, that that bowl is on a plate, that plate is on a table, that table is in a room. We're aware that there's smell, that we're aware of all this stuff. It's not in the picture, but we know there are other dimensions at play. Similarly, we are limited just like the camera is limited. We only see three dimensions, but there are so many dimensions going on, and we only see a tiny little bit of it. So for any one of us to look at the world and go, oh my gosh, it's horrible or it's terrible, it's because we're looking at it through such a tiny little perspective, and not just distance-wise, but time-wise. We get this short little blink of an eye to look at it, and we pass judgment based on that. You know how some people have those mirrors in their bathrooms that when you flip them over, everything is 10 times magnified? Nothing looks good that close up, right? The world is very much as if we zoom in on what's happening in the Middle East, we're like, oh my gosh, it's terrible, it's horrible, we're doomed. Zoom out. Zoom out, not just distance, but time. Look at the big picture. Last time I watched TV, Ally McBeal was on. Some of you get how long ago that is. And so people ask me, well, do you know what's going on in the Middle East? And I go, well, let me guess. Because it's not new. None of this is new. And yet we are sucked into the sensationalizing of it, and it just brings us down every single time. And then we end up in this darkness. And I'm not suggesting that we stick our head in the sand and pretend it's not happening. Again, quite the opposite. I'm suggesting we zoom out and look at the big picture. If you're going to watch CNN, was it constantly negative news? Then, you know, balance it with some positive stuff as well. And again, I'd go as far as say that's why we get together. That's why we're here. That's why congregation, that's the intention, is to realize there is both in the world. It's not one or the other, and it's not like evil's winning and or good is strengthening. It's all happening simultaneously. And when we are not at peace within ourselves, we cannot live at peace with others. So that kind of brings us back to where we started. How do we live at peace with ourselves? That's when what you think, what you say, and what you do are all in alignment. So before you go out there and tell other people what they should do and how they should live their lives, or that ever horrible sentence of, you know what your problem is, look in the mirror. Look at the challenges in your life. You know, many of us say, I want to live a simple and uncomplicated life. I don't want stress in my life. I don't want complications in my life. And yet we regularly make decisions that add complications to our lives, right? And so the thing is, look at your own life. It's really easy to look at someone else and realize what they're doing wrong. But can we look at ourselves and go, how am I contributing to my own suffering? My dad used to tell me a joke about this guy who goes to the doctor and says, "Doc, you know, every time I drink tea, my right eye hurts. Every time I drink tea, my right eye hurts. And I love tea, but it hurts every time I drink it." He left the teaspoon in the mug, and every time he drank tea, he was poking himself in the eye. But we're constantly looking for someone else to blame, some other issue, anything other than go, how am I doing this? How am I contributing to my own suffering, and how can I stop? And a lot of it is because attachment and fear and desire and anger. And many people I talk to, they say, well, they're so angry at someone. It's like, well, they deserve it. I'm like, you're not hurting them. They probably don't care. They probably don't even know that you're still hanging on to this. You're hurting you. Let that go. I'm waiting for an apology. They don't even have to be sorry for you to forgive them. You can just let it go. Does that make sense? The first principle in Buddhist boot camp, and as you saw, every chapter is only a page long, and you can read them in any order. And it's because every chapter is a journal entry or a letter that I had sent to my friends over the course of 8 years. So that's why they're so short. It's just, I always say, a chapter a day keeps the ego at bay. Just one. And even though they're short, they give you a lot to digest. And the first principle in Buddhist boot camp is that the opposite of what you know is also true. Because if you can make peace with that the opposite of your truth is equally true to somebody else, somewhere else, because of their time, place, and circumstance, if you can make peace with that, you're eliminating judgment, you're eliminating resentment, you're eliminating this us and them. It's just, you take your truth with a capital T and you put a little t on it. And you say, this is my truth right now. Because let's face it, your truth 10 years ago, 15 years ago, is different perhaps than your truth now. And it's going to change as time goes on. So to cling to anything like this white knuckle like mine, it's not healthy. In fact, when it's time to let it go, it's going to be that much harder. I saw a quote that said, everything I've ever let go of had claw marks in it. You know, it's because when we cling to something, we cling to it so tightly instead of holding it lightly. And it's tough. We're very inclined to think that our truth is the ultimate truth. Think about how self-centered that is. The ultimate truth is, conveniently enough, my own. And anyone who disagrees with me is wrong. That's the ego's need to feel right by making someone else wrong, to feel superior by making someone else inferior. An autobiography of a yogi, it's called Feeling Tall by Cutting Off the Heads of Other Men. I think surely there's a healthier way for us to feel confident and at peace with our own values without needing to belittle someone else's. And how do we do that? Well, I take it, of course, to the extreme, because I think, again, if we can make peace with the extreme, we can make peace with everything else. Neil Donald Walsh did this in Conversations with God. Have you ever read that? He said, Hitler went to heaven. When you understand this, you understand God. And I love that, because he went straight to our little sore spot, straight to our little button. And, you know, if that still presses your buttons, you still have some work to do. And literally, life is not about creating an environment where nobody pushes your buttons. It's about getting to a place where you don't have any buttons that can be pushed. That's true freedom. So when I meet someone who believes the exact opposite than I and tells me, Timber, the sky is green, and I believe it to be blue, I don't argue with them. There's no need to. I don't need to know it's not, it's blue. I don't need to call my friends, go, look, all these people believe it's blue. I don't need to Google it. I don't need to Wikipedia it. I need to go, Alexa, what color is the sky? I don't need to do that. I just walk away from that experience knowing that to some people, the sky looks green. How much easier would life be if we were able to just do that? I mean, for me, that immediately makes my shoulders relax, makes my body just, that's great. To some people, the sky, why it looks green to them, it's completely irrelevant. Maybe they're colorblind. Maybe they saw the sky before a storm. Maybe I'm colorblind. Doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter because the blueness of my sky is not at all jeopardized by how green someone else perceives it to be. My sky is still just as blue. But when we live our lives so sensitive to, oh my gosh, they disagreed with me, I need to prove them wrong, we are constantly at war with the world around us. And it stems from this idea that other people are responsible for how we feel. I talked about this last night. We identify as victims when we say, you make me feel. No one can make you feel. Eleanor Roosevelt said, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. And I not only agree, I believe no one can make you feel anything without your consent. You can say something offensive to me, and then the power is here, and I choose, do I want to be offended or not? What you do, that's you. That's all you, and it says a lot about you. How I respond, that says a lot about me. And so it's really important for us to take that power back and stop saying, you make me feel, or I can't help the way I feel. Sure, who can? It's your responsibility. It's your job. And so I choose to be at peace with the world, even if it's already broken, so to speak. That is a judgment based on my limited perspective. Me looking at the world and going, it's broken. According to whom? According to me. I asked this last night, I'm going to do it again. How many of you believe in God or spirit or higher power or whatnot? Okay. How many of you worry? Yeah. See the problem there? I think it is perfectly possible for us to be in a frustrating situation and choose not to be frustrated, to be in a stressful situation and choose not to be stressed. It all has to do with whether we choose to keep our power or to give it away. And we have the power to not only lift ourselves, but to empower others around us. I think that's the invitation. I think that's what living a congruent life would look like, is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are all in harmony. Does that make sense? I asked that a lot last night, and people said, yeah, and then towards the end, everyone had a question. I work a lot with high schools. Buddhist boot camp is now required reading in 6 high schools in California, and I didn't do that. You guys did. In fact, a high school teacher, local high school teacher, approached me last night and said, how do I do that here? And the way we do that is, and get around the administration, because I'm sure you can imagine there's going to be a lot of pushback. I remember there was a lot of pushback in California when they tried to introduce yoga into high schools. I'm like, oh, you're teaching the kids Buddhism. And another rule is like, no. So now we went past that. You can actually take yoga as opposed to PE. Or tennis or whatnot. We can't call it yoga. And schools now have like a meditation room. They have mindfulness classes. I go in and they do a book report on my journal. It's very weird. But the way we get around the administration is when they decide to introduce the book to the classrooms, they don't ask the administration for money to buy the books. I donate the books. In fact, I'll go a step further. You guys donate the books. So every time you get a book, another one is donated to high schools, to the prison library project, and to veteran support programs. So that's what you guys are doing. And it's an incredible difference that we're making and enriching people's lives. I just came back from 2 weeks in Pennsylvania and DC and Virginia, where we work with inmates who receive not just free yoga and meditation classes, but yoga teacher training. So they become certified yoga instructors. And if they are lifers, they become the resident yoga instructor. And if they come out, they come out as certified instructors who often go back to teach the next wave some yoga. And it's this beautiful thing that we're doing. And I say we because we're all doing this together. So the invitation is not to do this, not to point the finger at other people and go, well, they should be doing this and they shouldn't be doing this. And look at yourself. Look at your own decisions. Are any of your decisions hostile? Are any of your actions not in line with your values? One of the greatest quote that I think hits the nail on the head for me is by Gandhi, and he said, your actions convey your priorities. It's a really tough one to swallow because we like to think that you know, what we believe is who we are. I don't care what you believe. I'll tell you that right now. I don't care. It's irrelevant. Because your beliefs don't make you a better person. Your behavior does. So it doesn't matter if you're Christian or Buddhist. The invitation is to be Christ-like or Buddha-like. There's a big difference there. In fact, I remember a quote by Maya Angelou who said, every time someone tells me that they're Christian, I say, already? I'm still working on it. And I think that we're all working on it. It's all to look within and go, am I saying one thing and doing another? So when we're done with this, I'm going to be in the room right next door. I do have books. This is not a sales pitch because I want to make a profit. Again, even if you already have the book, please get another one. It's only $10. And every time you get one, another one is donated to the Prison Library Project. That's what's going to get the books into schools, maybe here locally, and before you know it, I'm here and giving a talk at a local Arizona high school. So thank you guys for being here. In a world where so many people walk in the darkness, we are grateful for the light. Where so many people walk in doubt, we are grateful for our faith. And where so many people walk alone, we are grateful for each other. Thank you for being here. Namaste.